Here we go. It's We Talk Fantasy Football, episode number 4 for the 2012 season. It's episode number 5, you're right. It's week number 4, we're wrapping up episode number 5. I am Mo, and I am, as always, joined by championship-winning analyst Brett. How are you doing?
Well, looks like it's going to be a pretty good week for us, so that's what matters.
That is what matters. It really is all about us, because we'll see you, and we'll get to that later. But
all right, it's time to wrap up the show. So
it's been a long one, folks. Probably will be a quick one here, but we're going to just run through. This show is going to be subtitled, They're Your Best Players for a Reason. We're going to talk about some of the times we fall into this trap as much as anybody else. So you draft somebody in the first few rounds, and you decide to sit him because he's struggling for somebody else who you drafted much later who's looking like they have potential. This week for us, it was Cam Newton, who has had one good game, had a couple poor games, we weren't sure about his matchup against the Falcons. And we had Christian Ponder, who was coming on. We thought, well, let's play Ponder. The numbers are saying play Ponder. But the truth is, you shouldn't make that move because he's your best player for a reason. He was our first-round draft pick in the league that we sat him. He's your best player for a reason, and he vastly outperformed Ponder. And you know why? He's simply the more talented player. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about here today, how they're your best players for a reason. Anything to add on that, Brett?
Well, I think it's all too easy to get stuck in the trap, especially when you start going
by. We do it once or twice every year.
Oh, and it's always early.
Even though we say we won't.
Yeah, it's always early, but you get stuck in the trap of who's got the best matchup, who's playing the best right now. And at a certain point, you have to start making those decisions because you have a better sample size. But in week 3, making a decision for week 4, you don't have a good enough sample size yet to be able to say that Christian Ponder is pretty much guaranteed to outperform Cam Newton. You just don't have it.
No, no.
By week 10, you will have it.
Yeah, and week 10, and you know what? That's true. I mean, there's rare cases, like with RG3, you've already seen. You might have drafted somebody, you know, much earlier. I don't know. A quarterback you would have drafted in the 3rd or 4th round, for instance, who's just being outperformed by him. And you know what? You probably have enough sample size right now.
Well,
but that's a rare exception.
Like, I could understand saying, I'm going to play RG3 only over Tony Romo.
Yeah, or Matthew Stafford at this point.
Yeah.
You have enough of a sample size, but that's a rare case. So let's go through here. Ray Rice is somebody who drafted 2nd overall generally. That's his average draft position. He hasn't matched that yet, but he's one of your best players. He's not somebody you sit regardless if you're thinking about it. Do you think anybody's making that mistake with him?
I think it's very hard to make that mistake ultimately with Ray Rice because he's still putting up good numbers. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's very hard when somebody's putting up good numbers to sit them. Like, he's not putting up eye-popping numbers, but he's putting up good, solid, consistent running back numbers. So he probably doesn't get sat for that reason. And I can't imagine the player that you have to have who is your 6th-round pick that could be better than Ray Rice ultimately. That's kind of where I'm like, who is that guy that you drafted?
How many running backs? Spiller. If you have a C.J. Spiller or Reggie Bush, maybe you're thinking maybe you have C.J. Spiller, Reggie Bush, and Ray Rice, and you're thinking it's time to sit Ray Rice. It still isn't, though, is the point.
No.
at least not this early in the season. Darren McFadden is another one where he certainly has had one good game and 3 games that weren't so good, but he's one of your best players for a reason still, isn't he?
Well, guaranteed that somebody has sat Darren McFadden. Guaranteed, because
somebody sat him on the week that he went nuts.
Yeah, for sure, we did.
Yeah,
and the truth of the matter is that he is a supremely talented football player, who, as much as he's getting used to the system, he's still going to have good games every now and then, and he's so talented you can't afford to not have him in your lineup.
Chris Johnson's another one. Obviously, we've been really hard on Chris Johnson here on this podcast, and that's because we feel that he's not a first-round draft pick. But we always said he's a 3rd or 4th-round draft pick and capable of putting up the 1,000, 1,100 yards, you know, and, you know, 6 or 8 TDs and probably 1,400 total yards. That's good for what – that's kind of more what we always said you should need to temper your expectations with. People should not be sitting him at this point still, should they?
Probably not. I mean, he's – I mean, everybody thought that Houston was going to be a tough matchup for him. It didn't prove to be as tough a matchup as people expected. He's going to put up numbers. You just don't know when. He's also going to put up clunkers. So you have to be ready for both.
Well, that comes back to one of the strategies. If you have a player like a Chris Johnson, there's the strategy of home run hitters. If you play a whole lineup of home run hitters, guys who are likely to put up either a 30-point game or a 0-point game, but you play, you know, an entire lineup of that, and every single week you have five guys put up 30 points, you have enough points to win, even if the other four guys on your team or whatever are kind of blow it. And Chris Johnson is one of those guys. If you can have one or two of those guys and build a couple consistent around them. But, I mean, you just have to understand what you're getting with him.
Yeah, and, I mean, even guys that look like they're going to be home run hitters or look like they're going to be consistent have bad games. I mean, just look at Dennis Pitta this week. I mean, here's a guy who has consistently been getting like 10 to 15 targets per game, and he gets two targets, I think, and zero catches. So,
and one of the players I know a lot of people are starting to get worried about because he wasn't being seen in the offense, and because there is still worries, even though they're 4-0, they're not an offensive powerhouse in Arizona. But Larry Fitzgerald had a good game, not as good as Roberts at the other receiver spot, but still, he had a solid game. He's Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you have to say that if you've got Larry Fitzgerald on your team, you would rather have Larry Fitzgerald than Andre Roberts any and every day of the week, because he's always going to be the man.
Yeah. Whereas, on the other hand, you have Julio Jones, who has another guy who could sometimes be the man, and sometimes he'll be the man. And you know what? It's frustrating unless you own them both, and even then, if you own them both, that's a scary prospect. But Roddy White and Julio Jones are proving to be that they're both going to be number one receivers, but some weeks they'll take each other out of the game. That doesn't mean you sit them, because at the end of the season, I still think Julio Jones is going to put up 1,400 yards and 10 TDs.
Oh, Julio Jones is a monster, and he absolutely has the potential to put up as many points as you can possibly feed him, really. But Roddy White is a great receiver as well, and has had a lot of great seasons. I mean, they weren't drafted like 18th and 25th overall, and so close together for a they were for a reason, because they're both really talented receivers.
Jamaal Charles is somebody that we were giving up on after week two, largely because we were worried about his knee. And that bit us in the ass.
Boy, did it ever. Yep, I could have won a game if I just played Jamaal Charles. Thankfully, I played him this week, and it turned out well. But knee injuries are such an odd thing, especially for players coming off of major knee injuries. And Jamaal Charles just fit that bill where you look at him and you're like, well, he's coming off the injury. He hasn't played very well. He's got a potentially banged up knee this year. So
yeah, week two they're not running him that much. He has his Hillis there who's playing so well. At the end of the day, he's a more talented player than Hillis.
Oh, absolutely, by a long shot he is. And
you got to trust that.
Yeah, and he's proving right now that. You know, his knee is not that big an issue. And until you have a larger sample size, like I say, you have to go with him.
Yeah. So that brings us to a very interesting player then, Ryan Matthews, who has, of course, missed some with injuries and then fumbled. And then this week not got many carries. Was fairly effective when he was in there, but it wasn't in there much because Jackie Battle was getting more touches ultimately than him. So there's a lot of people that are sitting there going, oh, I'm going to leave, Ryan Matthews on my bench. Especially this week. I think that's a huge mistake because Battles isn't very good and Matthews has talent and they're playing the Saints.
Well, it's funny because I was looking on the waivers, you know, for some last minute waivers, and I saw that somebody picked up Jackie Battle. And I was thinking to myself, why in hell are you picking up Jackie Battle? He has no value whatsoever. And then you read that Norv Turner said that Jackie Battle gave us our best chance to win.
Bullshit.
Was that coach speak, I might add?
It was. And you know what? They were playing a weak team, so they could get away with that this week.
Yeah, and
the Saints may be 0-4, but they're dangerous 0-4.
Yeah, they're close. They're real close. And I just think that the concept of Jackie Battle, who is infinitely less talented than Ryan Matthews. I mean, sure, Ryan Matthews is going to have to earn the coach's trust again, but Ryan Matthews is a far superior option. Eventually, he's going to break out and he's going to carry the load. So, I mean, the Jackie Battle idea, just wow.
Yeah, maybe. So, I mean, it's painful because you could be bit in the ass if you keep playing Ryan Matthews the next 3 or 4 weeks, waiting for him to show up. He may never do it, but the truth is, at the end of the day, he's still your best bet. At least he's their best bet over Battle. And I have to think, you know, I mean, look at how he finished the season last year.
Yeah, I mean,
it's one thing that's keeping him from reaching his potential, and that's fumbling.
Yeah, unless you have a guy, unless you have, like, in our one league where we have four amazing running backs, and you can say, well, I don't really like Matthews' matchup, so I'm going to replace him with Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
Then that's fine. If you have that option, go ahead, replace him every day.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that option, and your option is a Fred Jackson.
Or Jonathan Stewart.
Or Jonathan Stewart. Then
nothing against those players. You just don't do it, though.
No, I mean, you've got to go with the guy who's probably going to get the touches.
Yeah, exactly. And, or, you know what, it has recently shown, like I say, last year. I mean, you don't want to have wasted a second-round draft pick and have that guy on your bench that costs you a game. Jamaal Charles, like I say, was a good example a couple weeks ago for your team. So keep going. Brandon Marshall's another one. I think a lot of people are worried because they're worried about his quarterback.
It's understandable. I mean, Cutler's a pop gun. I mean, he's kind of a loose cannon out there, but he's also proven that he can make all the throws. I think the number one problem is not Jay Cutler. It's not Brandon Marshall. It's not their chemistry. It's the offensive line. Their offensive line is so horrible in Chicago that Jay Cutler has less time to throw the football than Brandon Whedon does.
That's true. That's true. And they played awful protecting him. Meanwhile, they played well when they're, you know, on the run, their run push for both Bush and Forte, who'll be back in tonight quickly. So that's cool for us. Even though I guess we're not playing him because who expected him to play?
Yeah, but yeah, still, we're not
just
playing
happy
him.
He's healthy so quick. So Jordy Nelson is another one. Jordy Nelson is much like one of those receivers that we talk about, you know, like a Julio Jones. He's going to have his clunkers, but he's going to end up by the end of the season having more, you know, winners than clunkers, right?
Well, when you've got a guy and when you've got a quarterback who loves to throw the football around. You know, I mean, everybody and anybody on that offense could catch 5 passes in any given moment. So, yeah, someday it's going to be Jordy Nelson's day. Someday it's going to be James Jones. You know, someday it's going to be Jennings if he plays again, or even Randall Cobb. You know, it could be anybody on that offense. Cedric Benson is going to, like, have a career year for catching the football this year if things carry on. So, I mean, it's craziness.
Yeah. And Michael Turner is another one who you weren't too high on. I was not quite as low on as him. He's going in the early third round, and he hadn't performed. And he has a terrific game this week. I think for me, I look at him, I think, you can't sit him until you know they know Rodgers is a better player. And while Rodgers has shown more potential, and still does, despite this last game, you still just don't know it. So if you have him, you got to play him. Let me tell you, he was motivated in a couple of those runs. He dragged players like he used to.
Well, I think the thing with Michael Turner is that, in my case, I didn't like Michael Turner. So what did I do?
You never took him.
I didn't draft him. Yeah, and that's kind of like you're just kind of taking the potential issues out of your repertoire. I mean, it's just like, who cares? If I don't have Michael Turner, I don't have to worry about benching him. And so I'm going to have to worry about somebody else, like, say, Frank Gore.
And Dez Bryant was one of the highest risk-reward players coming into the season. What about him?
Well, Dez Bryant is a real talented guy. And I'll admit there's always concern because he's kind of the number two guy there who has the potential to be the number one guy.
He's more talented than the guy ahead of him who's a good player, but his talent is top flight.
Yeah, And I just think that he still doesn't quite have his head screwed on right, and he still doesn't quite have all of the chemistry needed with Tony Romo to fully pull that off. I can understand somebody pulling Dez Bryant out. You hate to do it because he is a supreme talent, and his talent says that you play him, but you know the other elements say if you have a better option, then you try it.
See, and I think you just play him and ride it out. It's tough because this tonight, again, they say we're recording this before Monday Night Football is taken on the Bears, but I look at it and I think he's probably not going to perform against the Bears, which is going to have even more people thinking, take him out. And I'm going, no, play him. It'll come.
It'll come, but my only concern is, will it come on a regular basis, or is it going
to
be...
Some of these guys, it never will. So they're, like you say, it's those home run hitters. I mean, it depends on your strategy. If you have players like him, you have to understand what you're getting ahead of time. Marcus Colston's one of those. I mean, you know, underperforming, and then he just went off this week.
Oh, yeah, and Marcus Colston has always been good for that. Like, that is his MO.
He's streaky.
And, yeah, he's totally streaky. And as, again, Drew Brees is a guy who... throws the ball around better as well as anybody in the league. And I think that the thing is that by the time you're hitting these guys, you're generally looking at your wide receiver twos. If you have one of these guys as your wide receiver one, then absolutely you have to play them week in and week out because they are by far your best option. If you manage to grab these guys as your two, or, you know, I don't know how you did it three, then... you can probably find a way to sit them. But if they're your one, you got to play them.
Now, Frank Gore is one of those guys who has been solid and not spectacular. So I think a lot of people are going, oh, I'm waiting for the shoe to fall off because he hasn't been spectacular and I didn't have high expectations for him coming into the season. We're not seeing any signs of that, though.
No, I mean, there's always the injury question. There's always the wearing down question. But at this point... why would you sit him? He's playing consistently well, and their team is, really good.
Really good. Really good. That was, and you know what? Losing to the Vikings may not turn out to be that bad. They just might also be really good team, but if they meet again in the playoffs, I'm favoring the 49ers.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. I mean, the 49ers, when they really want to win, when they really go out there and game plan, as we saw with the Jets game, when the 49ers specifically game plan to take elements of your offense out of the equation, forget it.
Are we seeing a shift in balance 4 games into the season, or is it just too early to see when we see teams, 4-0, the 4-0 Cardinals, the 3-1 Vikings, the... you know, I mean, the Niners now for their second straight season. I mean, the Eagles look like a weak 3-1 team, but the Falcons look like a strong team. And we're seeing teams like the Saints. We're seeing teams like even the Giants, you know, 2-2. We're seeing teams like...
the Packers. Look at the Packers.
2-2. Are we seeing that, or is this going to even out and at the end of the best teams will still be the best teams, except for the Saints, because they got no coaching?
Yeah, I think that, in my opinion... the best teams are still going to be the best teams because we've seen it in previous seasons where teams start out really, really hot and then they just completely tank for the rest of the season. And it's just going to come down to, you know, whoever has the best talent is going to win. You know, because game planning and matchups and all that stuff, it counts. But best talent makes the difference.
4 teams in the NFC West do seem like strong teams, though. I got to say, that's new, because 2 years ago we talked about the 4 teams in the NFC West being the worst in football.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. And, I mean, you know, but it's all defense.
Yeah.
I mean, those defenses are killer.
Yeah.
Is what they are.
Yeah, exactly. And all those teams are much better at home than on the road as well, which is very interesting. So Michael Vick, how many people do you think sat him this week?
I would say a ton. I did. Every chance I got.
And?
Well, it worked fine because I had Joe Flacco.
How many people do you think sat him for Christian Ponder? Jake Locker?
Yeah, I suspect there was a bunch of people who would have gone out and tried that too. Yeah, I mean Vick is he's an up and down player, but eventually he's going to get it. And when he gets it, he's going to be good again.
Well, the thing about Vic is he's a really talented player like we say, he's no longer the best athlete in the field, but he's still a very good athlete. Boy, I always wonder how good he'd be if his coach actually made the offense fit him instead of made him try and fit the offense.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah, if you were actually, if you put him now into the offense that that RG3 is playing in, he'd probably be a stud.
He'd be a stud. You know what? Here's a guy who maybe you say you don't sit your best players, but I'm not sure what to think about Steve Smith from the Carolina Panthers at this point. I mean, there's times in the past where I thought he had already was past his prime and then would come back. He's such an angry little dude. How about now? Do you sit, or is he still one of your best players?
He's absolutely one of your best players. He's on pace for just over 1,300 yards after four games. I mean, you don't sit 1,300 yards no matter what you're
But people thinking. Don't realize he's doing it.
No, nobody ever realizes that Steve Smith is playing extremely well. It's one of those things. He's short, and you don't notice him. It's the same thing for a defensive back, and it's the same thing in fantasy football. You just don't see it, but he quietly puts up a really strong season.
So is he one of those guys you think people might be able to trade for then without giving up much? Because the owners that have him might think that that he's not going to keep up the pace or that might not realize how valuable he's been to them?
I think that if you could find somebody that, like if you had somebody on your team that you thought was going to trail off, who maybe started hot, and you were looking at getting a guy who was going to be super consistent, then absolutely Steve Smith is one of those guys that I would totally be interested in.
Okay. All right, let's look at Antonio Gates. He has yet to perform. I say don't give up on him because he's Antonio Gates. You drafted him probably second or third tight end taken. Jermichael Finley, I think, can largely, even Jimmy Graham, I think all of them can be put in this category. You just can't sit them there, can you? They're still your best players.
Well, you've drafted them as your best players, and the tight ends are so up and down. Now, the problem is that you take a guy like Pitta, who nobody drafted.
No.
But he gets so many targets that there were so many tight ends this year that instantly popped up on the waiver wire after like week one and week two, that you're actually able to find those guys to replace these guys who aren't playing very well. Now, Antonio Gates is hard because he has all the talent and he has a quarterback who typically likes to throw to him. I know it's going to happen. I know that he's going to explode, but it is very, very challenging at that tight end position if you have somebody else on the bench who gets a lot of targets.
Yeah, if you have somebody who's just consistent and you're sitting there going, okay, that guy's going to give me 8 points guaranteed, or am I going to wait for Gates to give me that 15, 20 for but he'll probably do it for a 4 or 5 or 6 game stretch. So, I mean, you got to ride Gates out as far as I'm concerned, despite everything. Let's see, who else is out there? Ooh, I'm taking a look. Is Tony Romo somebody that's still one of your best players?
Oh, more than likely. I mean, he puts up good quarterback numbers. He's got really good offensive weapons. I mean, he's going to have bad matchups, but, you know, who doesn't, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you just have to roll through those. I mean, everybody has their bad matchups. Everybody has their good matchups. Everybody has a few bad games here and there, and you just play through it. But you've probably drafted him, and unless you manage to grab Peyton Manning after him or something like that, then, yeah, I mean, you're probably pretty safe going with Romo.
Now, a lot of people probably took a DeSean Jackson late fifth round or something like that, early sixth. And again, he had a bad game, a fair game, a bad game, and then a very good game. He'll put up the numbers by the end of the season, won't he?
Oh, he absolutely will. He's on pace for really good totals. I mean, his touchdown totals will probably rise by the end of the season. And ultimately, he's on a team with a lot of talent. So he should be able to get the numbers that you want out of him.
Now, Peyton Manning is one of the guys that we have a lot. And a lot of the times we have him and Joe Flacco together, like 5 times or something. And you said to me this week, who do you like more, Peyton or Joe? Joe had a nice matchup. Peyton had a nice matchup. Stats were saying that Peyton wasn't playing quite as well as Flacco, and I said I actually like Peyton because, and it was just that. It was like, well, he's got a good matchup, and he's still Peyton Manning. And this week, Flacco was good, and Manning was even better. So we called that one right. Say what you will. Manning, if you think he's going to be up and down, I don't think he is going to be. I think he's just going to get better and better.
He's absolutely going to get better and better. I mean, here's a guy who, sure, he's going to have trouble adjusting to his lack of arm strength. Eventually, he's going to figure out how to play, because he's still one of the smartest players in the game, if not the smartest. And so once he figures that out, then he'll be completely consistent, and he'll be getting you your QB1 numbers.
Yeah, no, he's, my worry with him was I wasn't 100% sold on his receiving core, but I am now. They're good. They give him the weapons he needs.
Oh, absolutely. Hell, they're probably as good as he's had in years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. So let's just look here a little bit. I think what we have seen is a shift, though. While I'm not sure we're seeing the shift yet in some of the positions, one of the things I do think we have seen the shift from players like Jennings, who are good players still but no longer the studs, to guys like Torrey Smith, who are now the studs. I think in the receivers, wide receivers, a guy like A.J. Green is now a stud. Marcus Colston is still a good player, but I don't know if I'd have him in that stud category anymore. So I think that's the one position where I feel comfortable saying we've seen a shift, and you're probably getting more value for your late picks than your early picks there.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of turnover in the wide receiver department. I mean, hell, you just look at Demaryius Thomas and you look at Eric Decker. I mean, they're two great examples of guys that you were probably able to get fairly late and who are putting up awesome numbers right now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so I think that's, of all the positions, the only one I'm ready to say is that we're seeing a new breed of players who next year are going to be the guys you're going to be looking to draft in the second and third round, whereas the guys that you were drafting second and third round this year are going to be falling to the fifth and sixth. That's the position that it appears to be the guys are emerging with. So we got anything else to say on this show here?
Well, one of the things that I just wanted to quickly touch on is the New York Jets.
Yeah.
I read an interesting article today that just talked about the Jets, and I mean, sure, there's a smile in my face any time that you talk about the Jets and how bad they are, but they're talking about...
You just hate Rex Ryan.
I do.
Hate him too, but I like him because he entertains me because he's such an idiot.
Yes, he is. He is a big idiot. And I guess that
he's not as big as he used to be.
Nope. He's a smaller big idiot.
He's a smaller. He's yeah, exactly.
I think when I look at that team though, people are talking about now because I remember when we talked in week one about Mark Sanchez, and he had exploded, had an awesome game, and so we were talking about it like, yeah, okay, there's talk to me at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Let's see
where I think we were saying talk to me at week 5 or 6.
Yes. Well, here we are at the end of week 4. They just got shut out by the San Francisco 49ers. Sanchez is yet again under 50%. Having trouble scoring touchdowns with the team. Now they don't have Santonio Holmes. They don't have a running game. They didn't have Dustin Keller in that case. And all I can see... Oh, and they don't have Darrell Revis, so the linchpin of their defense is gone. And yet, all you see coming out of there is like, well, it could be worse. Really? How is that?
Well, they're 2-2. But what I like is that before this last game, that Rex Ryan said, we think Darrell Revis might be able to come back for us for the Super Bowl. He still thinks, or is trying to sell it, that he's getting to the Super Bowl. You're not getting into the playoffs. That said, I'm still glad we've kept, and there has been a lot of temptation to dump Tebow because we grabbed him a lot. And I'm glad we still have him because eventually he's getting in there and he's putting up fantasy numbers despite not being a good quarterback, because there's a difference between a good quarterback and a good fantasy quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that Tebow will eventually get in there. I know that Rex Ryan is absolutely going
and
to
I have no doubt
hold that off.
Yeah, I know. I know he is, and I have absolutely no doubt. And it makes you wonder why they freaking traded for him. But but I have absolutely no doubt that he's going to get in there, and he's probably not going to. He's probably going to do much better than Sanchez, and still neither one of them will be there next year. That said, I have no doubt when he gets in there, he'll give us the fantasy numbers. It's just a matter of time. You can't keep playing Sanchez. The pressure is going to be too hot in that city for the QB controversy. It's already started to bubble, and it's not just any city. It's New Yorkers.
Well, I just don't understand. I mean, how you can continue to suggest that Sean Green, who has yet to break out, and I don't think will.
We never liked Sean Green even when he had that great playoff run where everybody was going, next year he's going to be the player. We were like, no, it was an anomaly.
Yeah.
Again, he just, you know, some guys can play really well, but they're just not that talented. You can have a great game or two, but at the end of the day, you have to have the talent and the athletic ability that really stands out. There has to be something, an intangible, that you see when you're watching a player. And he never had that.
And you even talk about Bilal Powell as the guy who could replace him. But the truth of the matter is that even last week when we were talking about picking up Bilal Powell, well, that's only because Bilal Powell is better than Roy Helu on injured reserve.
Yeah, exactly. Not that he's some spectacular talent either. You know, some teams, I look at a Kendall Hunter, who could be a top 20 back, who's backing up a top 10 back in Frank Gore. And then I look at a team like the Jets, who don't have anybody.
Yeah, and then even Ben Tate, you know, could be a top 10 back.
Who's top backing five.
Up a, who's backing up a top one back.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's true. So.
Yeah, they've just done such a terrible job, and it gives me a little, it warms the cockles of my heart to a little degree, given how much I dislike.
Well, you reap what you sow, and sometimes it's karma, and it's kind of coming back on him, and the way he's behaved over the years. You've been waiting for this. They're a team you love to hate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, I think that's about it. We are OUT for this week. Anything else you want to say, Brett?
Well, I'm just going to say that on Twitter, I'm Brett, B-R-E-T-T underscore WeTalk.
And who am I?
And you're Mo underscore WeTalk, and that's an M-O with no E.
That's right. And how can they email us, Brett?
Well, that would be Mo, again with no E, at WeTalkPodcast.com, and Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com.
Again with two T's.
That's right. Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And really, essentially,
well, we're OUT, and
we'll see you, and we'll beat you.